Meeting of Community Regional Affairs to order. It's now 1:35. With me today is Senator Tom Wagner, myself, Senator Stedman. We have one item on the agenda. We're going to have a public hearing, and that item is going to be House Bill 278, and we'll have a presentation by Representative Hawker, and then we'll have, you can come on up and sit down. And then we'll have questions from the committee. I'd like the record to reflect we do not have a quorum. And then we're going to open it up for questions. There's some people in the off-net that want to speak, and there's some people in the audience here that would want to speak. And with that, Representative Hawker, if you could present the bill. Kind of, it can get fairly detailed, so maybe go ahead and present it. And then at some point, though, I want to delve in down into the risk and risk shifting issues faced here. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, member of the committee. Good to be here with you today. For the record, I am Representative Mike Hawker, District 32, from the Eagle River Anchorage and Turnagain Arm area. The bill I'm presenting today, House Bill 278, is a bill that we drafted and worked with a couple of the nation's investment banking firms. I've got a gentleman here with me today also, Mr. John Wanamaker with Seattle Northwest Securities out of Anchorage. And he, someone is, as a investment professional, is here to participate in the presentation and answer more technical questions from an objective perspective rather than a legislator's perspective. As we all know, we have a significant issue in funding. The state and our governmental employers in the state face a significant issue in funding our actuarially determined but yet unfunded pension obligation for past service costs. And the mechanism offered in this bill would be one tool in a toolbox of how to deal with that problem. And I emphasize it's one tool in a toolbox. It's certainly not a right answer for everyone, may not be a right answer for anyone, but the bill would authorize government employers in the state to avail themselves of the municipal bond bank in structuring transactions, which have generically been referred to as pension bonding transactions or pension obligation bonding transactions. Bill also includes what I truly believe is a clarification of a right that municipalities currently have to actually conduct those transactions, but the legal community says, well, it's not as clear as it could be, so the bill also would empower a single community to conduct such a transaction on its own. A pension obligation bonding transaction is simply an arbitrage transaction, a transaction where someone who has a pension liability to their plan issues debt. The proceeds of the debt are then invested with the plan's assets and have a rate of return, of course, on those investments the same as the rest of the plan's assets. In the case of the state of Alaska and our government employers here, that's a rate of return that has historically been demonstrated to be a little north of 8%. The ability to secure debt financing at less than 8%, whatever the difference is a simple, it's simply savings. It's borrowing for cheap, investing for expensive, and benefiting from the differential. And I think your investment guys can give you certainly a more credible credible number than I could give you as a legislator, but I believe that the spread would be somewhere, even today, in today's markets, between with an all-in debt rate of in the north end of the 5%. And truly we believe that, and we have demonstrated in this state, a recurring ability both in our permanent fund and in the pension funds. And this is even before we took the steps last year to enhance the quality of pension investments of in the south end of the 8%. So I think the margin is there for a transaction to be structured that could prove to be viable. The bill before you is strictly an empowering bill. It does not authorize any transactions. It simply empowers municipalities to work with the municipal bond bank, grants the power to the municipal bond bank to work with municipalities, I guess would be a better definition, and see if they could structure such a transaction. There's no question that these sort of transactions, you know, this arbitrage transaction, which depends on investing for a greater return over time than the cost of your debt, it has some inherent market risk. And I think you'll largely hear three or four objections raised in the money community in that oppose these sort of transactions or feel they're too risky. First is that that the transaction does have too much inherent investment risk, that you're not going to invest for more than what you are able to borrow at. You'll hear, you know, there's always a concern about constitutional limitations, as in the state of Alaska, both the state and municipalities are limited in their ability to general obligation bond debt for the purpose of capital projects. And you'll hear, you know, concerns that can be raised that say that, well, issuing such debt transaction could impair the state's or the municipality's credit ratings. And then there's a fourth, and there's been some concerns that was raised particularly by the administration that they're afraid that municipalities might get into one of these transactions and then simply refuse to pay. I believe there are very rational analyses that would lead one to the conclusion that while those risks all do exist, that they're adequately mitigated and protected by the forces within the market, that we would not be subjecting anyone or ourselves assuming too much risk in pursuing one of these transactions. I think as far as state credit rating, I believe your packet includes some comments from Standard & Poor's Rating Agency, as well as an informational primer from ORIC, which is a securities law firm. And that primer is particularly sound, but I think they tend to point out that the agencies actually do endorse these sort of transactions, and they're viewed as a state and a municipality government employer stepping up, recognizing an obligation, and taking what would be viewed as a positive step in managing the obligation. The constitutional limits question, the key there is how you structure the transaction. And you can certainly, from my own experience on Wall Street, they're a very creative bunch of folk out there able to structure transactions within our constitutional limits, but it's why we have to turn to some vehicles that are not by definition general obligation bonds. Although if we had general obligation bonding authority, we could probably execute a transaction even more efficiently. But, and by more efficiently, I mean at a lower cost to the borrower. But today, we're not looking to pursue that further authority. We're only looking to empower governmental employers to take advantage of the other vehicles that might be available. The investment risk and market timing issue, that's very legitimate. The shorter a window one looks at. But I think we have to really keep in mind the sort of transactions contemplated here are transactions that are 25, 28 plus years involved in the contemplated transaction. And we've proved time and time again that over time, markets have performed very consistently. And you even look at the past 10 years history of investment returns for the state of Alaska's PERS and TERS system. In the past 10 years, we, of course, have had one of the greatest bear markets and one of the greatest bull markets certainly in our lifetimes, with some incredible market fluctuations. But yet, over the last 10 years, we've had returns north of 8% in both the PERS and TERS program. I believe we should have included in your package, if we didn't, a note from the Department of Revenue verifying that number. Likewise, over time, I believe the investment risk is mitigated. Key point again, over time and over the period of the transactions, rather than viewing it very shortly. As far as municipalities not paying up, it's certainly a bar. That's why we have the screening performed by the Municipal Bond Bank, their statutory responsibility to guide municipalities in entering into transactions, and we specifically put in the bill language that makes it very clear we are not to take a step that would put a community into a debt circumstance beyond its means to satisfy. So I think as this has gone through the bill drafting process and evolution in House committees, we've got a very good bill to bring forward to you. I'm looking for your counsel and input. And I'd invite you to take particular care looking at, and I say that the bill as it sits was specifically crafted coming out of the House to not, we exempted pension obligation bonds from any of the debt ceiling limits we place on the municipal bond bank. And that's a provision I would specifically ask this committee to look at and contribute a decision as to do we want to exempt these from that bond, you know, that debt limit, or would we as a state want to, you know, again, loop a cap back in here, so tighten it down a bit so that we'd have the ability to pursue some of the, that our government employers could pursue some of these transactions, but we'd statutorily limit the amount that we would allow them to pursue initially while the device is being proven in the state of Alaska. I'd be happy to answer questions. I think the gentleman, Mr. Wanamaker from Seattle Northwest Securities, who they provided a fair amount of legal talent and assistance participation in drafting this bill, is here to address investment banking concerns, and likewise, I think he'd be particularly sound at addressing more arrogant any of the detail concerns, and particularly the experience that they have had as a investment banker working with the state of Oregon, which I think is a poster child situation for the state of Alaska, where several years ago they did the Oregon legislature empowered school districts the ability to use these transactions. They proved very successful, and just this past year, the state of Oregon's voters approved a general obligation bond, a constitutional amendment enabling the use of general obligation bonds for such transactions. But with that, Mr. Chairman, I appreciate your indulgence, and we'd be happy to respond to any questions, sir.
Just a few, Rep. Hocker. Maybe you could just kind of explain in layman's terms how this mechanism would work. We've with multiple municipalities across the state, and we've got this entity called with the Bond Bank Authority, and then we'll have another entity out there, an investment banking firm, doing some work. Kind of explain how that system works and why would they borrow and what would they do with the money?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, again, as in any, the municipal bond bank exists today to facilitate municipalities, government employers in the state of Alaska who themselves may not have the financial wherewithal to approach the capital markets, the international capital markets. As we know, we're certainly a state with a couple of very large, sophisticated municipalities and quite a few municipalities that are, we go down the line to very, very small municipalities without a lot of fiscal sophistication. In this case, the empowerment that we are authorizing in this bill would be, as it relates to the use of the municipal bond bank, would be for a community or a number of communities jointly who would be interested in pursuing such a transaction to approach the municipal bond bank and have the municipal bond bank essentially through their powers that are granted in the bill as well to go to the market on behalf of those communities, issue debt just as in any other debt the municipal bond bank issues along with communities, are providing credit enhancement or however the vehicle might be. The money then would be, obviously the municipalities would be the ultimate obligors for the repayment of the debt. The money would go to the individual municipalities for the specific purpose of being deposited into the state's retirement investment trusts, where the money would be invested on behalf of those communities. The bill takes the approach of saying that if a community wants to put money into its PERS account or into its TERS account, either one of the public employees or the teacher's retirement, that as the money's invested, it would be earmarked and accounted for separately so that the benefit of the investment of that money would go to the benefit of the specific community that, again, stepped up to the plate and made the additional deposit. Am I hitting the direction you're looking for, sir?
Yeah, maybe take it a couple steps further so that each individual community, say there's a community that has a $25 million liability, and just as an example, and they want to do this to their entire liability, their unfunded liability. They would go out and issue $25 million in bonds.
Mr. Chairman, the idea would be, or the community would issue, or the bond authority would issue on behalf of that community, that amount of debt, yes, sir, and that debt in the open market would be payable at a rate of interest, you know, an all-in effective interest cost somewhere in the north range of 5%, between 5 and 6%. Mm-hmm. At the same time, when that money goes into the pension plans for that employer, who other, you know, they're on the hook for that same obligation to its pension plan, although it's not a bond debt obligation, but it's still a contractual obligation from the employer to the pension plan. The money goes into the pension plan, reduces that employer's unfunded past service cost. As a result, it then, when the actuarial valuation is performed on the plan, the employer's obligation for past service cost, you know, the component of their normal contribution to the pension plan on an annual basis, would be reduced. They would no longer have an unfunded past service cost. They would be fully funded. And instead of having an obligation to the pension plan that's, of course, growing, as we know in ourselves, when the money's not in the pension plan, we're losing 8%+ interest every year, that they in place, they would be substituting for that a fixed debt to the capital markets in the north range of 5%. And if I might offer, sir, 2 years ago when I first started, or 3 years ago actually, when I first started looking at these vehicles, had a couple of national firms, in fact, and it was not one of the firms that's involved here, look at, that has been part of helping me draft this bill, but that you looked at the state as a whole. And you know, at that time, we were looking at about a $6 billion unfunded liability. And two separate investment banking firms came up with an estimate on a what if, you know, just a hypothetical what if, and I'm not in any way proposing this would be a solution, but what if we went to the capital markets and bonded out the entire $6 billion liability, paid off our unfunded liability, then paid off the debt at the time in the markets over the 25 to whatever, I think it was a 25-year amortization on obviously a $6 billion pension funding issue. And both of those firms came back and indicated that the approximate net present value, so in, you know, real dollars today, the net present value savings to the pension plan would have been in the range of $1.5 billion. So that would have, I would submit, you know, mind you, this is modeling, and as we all know, modeling at best is modeling, but nonetheless, it's indicative that we would have had, you know, we've got the potential of saving the public somewhere in this state very significant amounts of money in satisfying these pension obligations.
So then under your proposal, each individual community would pick some point in time if they want to exercise this year, next year, or year after, for their debt, and they would go through that process?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, this bill is strictly permissive. It's a bill that creates the empowerment to pursue such transactions. Realistically, I don't, there are no transactions on the deck waiting to occur. Right. So it would be, it'd be a community-by-community decision by their community leaders.
Has this concept ever turned upside down anywhere before?
Mr. Chairman, absolutely. Yeah, particularly, we can point out some spectacular failures of the use of this vehicle. And I believe if you dissect those failures, and in fact, the ORIC report, I believe, it offers some particularly good examples of failures and diagnoses why they occurred. In particular instances, there were some, I believe even the transaction, I believe transactions that were abused. They were entered into with absolutely unrealistic expectations of returns. Some of these were done at a time when we were experiencing a short-run market gains. We all got, I think we probably all got a little complacent thinking we could have 25% returns on our investment every year. Some of those had planned on double-digit returns. That's just not realistic. We in this state have got, fortunately, the benchmark of the permanent fund in our own investment trust to show that we've got a pretty sound, reasonably, we can get a 8% long-term average return. Other transactions were used, and I believe absolutely inappropriately, when, as the state of Alaska did in the past 10 years, other communities, states, were facing budget constraints, and they were looking for any way they could fund their own states. They, in a lot of states that don't have the luxury of producing oil field, other states had entered into some transactions for the purpose of literally leveraging their pension plans to take money out of the plans and put it into the general fund to meet ongoing obligations for government. Again, I'd argue that is absolutely wrong. It clearly failed in a number of spectacular instances. But likewise, for the failures, I would also see, you know, asking that we look at the instances where they've succeeded and make certain that as we craft a bill, we have the sidebars and the I guess the sidebars in place to make sure we are approaching these transactions in a responsible manner.
The issue or the example you just mentioned, the 8%, we can just use that as a number. Then in this concept, you take and issue bonds, pay the 5% or 5.5% or 6%, whatever it is at the time. Money comes into the fund. I'm still not clear how it would generate any money.
Well, Mr. Chairman, the proceeds of the bond issuance would be deposited into the pension retirement trust and invested along with all the rest of the pension assets. And in that investment, in the balanced portfolio of investment, would return, again, over time, as we've demonstrated in the state of Alaska, a return in excess of 8%. Am I getting to your question, sir, or am I off track here?
You go out and you issue $6 billion in bonds, whatever number you want to use, or you can use $25 million, pick a town, whatever, doesn't make
any
difference.
Pick a number, yes, sir.
Yeah, you're going to pay the 5 or 6%, and you're going to make the spread between that and the 8% actuarial target. Is there any reinvestment risk, or where's the risk in this?
Well, the risk, Mr. Chairman, the risk is certainly that we fail to, the investment risk is that the investment of the funds by the pension plan, again, this case the state pensions, underneath the auspices of the ARM board, failed to return over the life of the bond issue a rate of return in excess of the cost of the bonds. So your risk is that for whatever reason, if we got a 25-year bond issue payable at 5.8%, that over that matching time frame, as that money sits invested in the pension funds, that the pension funds do not earn 5.8% over that time frame.
Yes. And is there I guess Oregon has been very successful, and other states have been less successful. Is there some period in the calendar where the less successful people are clustered, and some period in the calendar where the more successful people are clustered? Is this a issue of catching the swings in the financial markets, or what kind of risk exposure do we have there?
I'd say, sir, your question, sir, Mr. Chairman, goes to the excuse me, I think your question goes to the issue of market timing, and that would be that want to bifurcate the issue with the discussion a little bit. On a short-term basis, market timing, you know, the hypothetical that you make one of these transactions today, sign up for debt at 5.8%, and we go through a precipitous decline in market investments, and you've seen it yourself on a year-to-year basis, the investment of our retirement funds, as has the permanent fund. Some years it's had great gains, and some years it's had significant losses. So in a short window, you could look at this, although the community's obligated at 5.8%, that money's gone into the pension fund, and it's returned less. But the value of these transactions, and that's why we have to look at, thank you very much, Kim, we have to look at these as over time, the same way as when we're discussing permanent fund issues, we always look at the return, we don't evaluate the performance of the permanent funds investment managers on a one-year basis as we evaluate them over time and on their return in relation to the market as a whole. But we've clearly got a demonstrated market pattern in the United States here of, again, of a market history that demonstrates the ability to secure, to achieve that 8% return over time. And again, in these bonds being contractual obligations, when you lock in at a fixed rate in the obligation, that, of course, is not going to evolve over time.
Maybe I'll wait. I think there's going to be some other testimony. We'll get into the timing of a one-time investment versus a multi-year investment. And clearly, if you would have done an investment in 1999 versus 2005, well, I guess that's not a very good example. 1999 versus 1990, you would have substantially different rolling returns as you go forward. If we can just back out of this conversation and go into, if this turns upside down, the right now the obligation is with, well, most of us would agree that the obligation is with the municipalities for their own liability. At some point, when the liabilities become unmanageable at the local level, the state has to step in as the deep pockets. And maybe this is a question for the Alaska Municipal League, how the municipalities plan on dealing with these if we have 10 of them or 20 or 30 of them out there and two or three turn upside down. What do we do with the ones that turn upside down as far as the obligation, either implied or directly tied back to the state's treasury?
Using your vernacular of turned upside down, Mr. Chairman, again, I would not presume to be able to respond for on behalf of the intent of any municipality, but I would offer for the record that, in fact, today, the municipalities are essentially turned upside down. They have an obligation that is certainly stretching their ability to meet, as you know, we all see the requests coming, as you said, just the requests coming to us, and I will, for the record, agree with you. The PERS obligation is, in fact, an obligation of the municipalities. And what we're really trying to do with this vehicle is to provide a tool for those municipalities to help themselves without placing the state at an unnecessary risk, and certainly no more risk than we have today, in that I think we would be very hard-pressed to, since the retirement plans are essentially state-sponsored, I think we'd have, and constitutionally mandated benefits, we as a state would probably face a very difficult legal situation in walking away from a municipality's pension obligations.
We've got several entities. We've got the municipalities, and we've got the schools, and we've got the university, and then the state. Is this one of many steps, or is this the last step as far as, or are you looking at just doing this proposal for the municipalities, or is this the municipalities first, and then maybe bring in the schools, maybe bring in the university, maybe bring in the state? Or what, has there been any discussion with your committees over on the House side of that? Or
Yes, Mr. Chairman, that's been a subject of a fair amount of discussion. I certainly very freely acknowledge for the record that of the various governmental employers in the state, if we can look at the hierarchy, starting with the state itself, the current administration of the state of Alaska does not believe these transactions are in the best interests of the state, and they would not be participating in such a transaction. We have individual municipalities that have requested the ability to pursue such transactions. The university, and it would be their decision as to whether to pursue it in relation to their PERS liability or their TERS liability for their school district. The largest other governmental employer, which would be the University of Alaska. The University of Alaska had requested a specific authority to be included in the definition of governmental employer who may avail themselves of this sort of transaction, but at the request of Representative Wyrock in the House Finance Committee, that authority for the municipality or for the university was taken out of the bill, sir. So, and then the other half of your question went to what is the sort of the long vision of this. This is clearly this is one tool in a toolbox. It's going to take us a long time unless we somehow manage to write a check in this budget for $6 billion to eliminate the unfunded liability, which I think we all know that would be a a silly proposition. But this is but one tool, and following the Oregon model, looking at letting, you know, the communities with the wherewithal and with the interest to pursue transactions, be able to evidence the validity of those transactions, the viability of those transactions, and we also go through the process. We're going to have to set up the accounting mechanisms and the other mechanical aspects of this. But get a couple of transactions on the board and demonstrate that they would be successful, and I sincerely believe they will be proven successful, and then be able to come back and using that as further evidence, much as the state of Oregon did, be able to come back and ask, as ourselves, to reconsider whether we might wish to expand that authority or even pursue the ability for general obligation bonding on behalf of both the state or the municipalities to get even the more efficient operation. So again, I think it's a tool. It's one that I think that is proven adequately successful in the marketplace outside of Alaska. And again, as we look at this, just putting as many tools in the hands of our employers as we possibly can, or at least as far as we can responsibly.
So under our simple example, a town's $25 million under water and their liabilities, so they go out and issue $25 million in bonds. Those proceeds then are turned over to the ARMS board in your proposal, and they manage the money?
They would be invested under the auspices of the investment managers that are currently managing the state's pension investment trusts.
Would that, I don't see anybody here from that organization to testify, was that going to change their risk tolerances or change their impact them in any way that as far as the associated risk shifting that may be taking place underneath them?
Mr. Chairman, I would not presume to respond for anyone responsible for investing the retirement investment trust. However, this would, again, putting that $25 million into the investment trust would be functionally no different than if we as a legislature this year appropriate $25 million into the trust out of our general funds to relieve any pension debt. So as far as investment management, there'd be absolutely no effect on the current structure of investment management. It would simply be providing them additional assets to invest in accordance with their current investment guidelines and policies.
But wouldn't they be paying the bonds off over several years, 20 years or 25 years? And so they would be, in effect, if in a simple world, doubling their liability?
Mr. Chairman, I guess I'm a little confused here because the debt into the capital markets to the investors in the bonds would ultimately be an obligation of the government employer. It would not be an obligation of the pension trust.
Right. Well, I should take one step further. It flows back. Everything flows back to the employer.
Yes, I guess I'm a little confused, and I don't see how the obligation to the capital markets from the municipality would affect the operations of the trustee who is investing those proceeds.
The trustee that invests the proceeds would have to, and maybe we'll get into that question here in a little bit, is going to have to deal with his asset allocation and all his strategies, the debt service requirements that are going to be underneath to pay the bonds off.
Once again, sir, with respect, the money to pay off the bonds would not come from the pension trust. No, this is not a case where the only cash flow management that the pension trustees have to manage is the cash flow required to meet the benefits and obligations under the pension plans. That is, again, no different. It's the municipality themselves, as they do today, they're trying to figure out where to come up with the money each year to make that 20, if you say, like in the municipality that's got the $25 million liability, mm-hmm. They're trying to figure out where to get the money to pay that. That obligation would not be transferred to anyone. It would remain an obligation of the municipality to meet that obligation. The pension trust, the only obligation the pension trust has is to meet the benefit payments underneath the benefit payments that are part of the pension and retirement structure.
Right, okay. Well, we'll go into it further when the...
Oh, yeah, please.
Okay.
I got a little statement here later.
Sure.
Go ahead and take the...
Okay. Let's go into the room, and we'll have a representative from Seattle Northwest Securities. I guess, who wants to speak first? Don't be shy.
Mr. Chair, we have on the telephone a colleague of mine, Carol Samuels.
Okay.
Carol, they were up there. In the...
Okay, that's fine.
$5 billion plus issued in Oregon.
Right, we'll have Carol Samuels in on the phone. Are they still there?
Good afternoon. Can you all hear me?
Yep.
Wonderful. My name is Carol Samuels, and I am a vice president with Seattle Northwest Securities here in Oregon. And we are here today to testify in support of House Bill 278. I'm not going to spend an enormous amount of time going over many of the points you've already discussed. I think Representative Hawker did an excellent job in discussing what the bill would do and some of the risk factors. What I thought I would do, however, is turn your attention. I believe you've received paper copies of our PowerPoint presentation, and I'd like to turn your attention to page 8 of that presentation.
Okay, we're there.
As Representative Hawker indicated, we in Oregon have seen over 130 municipalities go into the capital markets for precisely the purpose of refinancing their pension liability. In response to your last question, Mr. Chairman, this is really a replacement financing. It's not a new financing. What would happen from a cash flow standpoint is that the funds, the bond proceeds, would be sent to the system. The obligation to the system would therefore be satisfied by the bond proceeds, and the municipality would use resources, say, in their general fund that they would otherwise use to pay off the obligation to the PERS system and use those funds to pay off the bonds. So it's not an additional liability, and if things work successfully from a reinvestment standpoint, the overall cost to the municipality should go down. As I mentioned, Oregon jurisdictions, over 100 of them, issued about $5 billion of these obligations over the past 4 years. Our projections are that they will save over $1 billion, so over 25% of what was borrowed we are projecting in savings, and those projections were made at an assumed reinvestment rate of 8%. The reason I want to turn your attention to page 8 is to show you what the actual experience of these jurisdictions has been since 2002. And as you correctly noted, timing is everything. We issued bonds during a period of very low interest rates, right before the market started to recover. And if you want to compare the second column of this table, which is marked TIC, which stands for true interest cost, it's our terminology for the blended interest rate, you can see that these jurisdictions borrowed anywhere from a low of 4.77% in late 2005 to a high of 7% in 2002. On average, most of these folks have been somewhere in the 5 to 5.5% range. And if you look at the far right column, you can see what their rate of return has been since the day they deposited the proceeds. Even the very highest borrowing rate, and as of today, as Representative Hawker mentioned, we'd be looking at something in the high 5s, low 6% range, has earned more than the cost of funds. The cost of funds is the break-even. To the extent these municipalities earn over, say, 7% in this last case, over the 25 years that they've borrowed, and it's an average, it's not an annual requirement, they will reduce the amount that they would otherwise pay to the PERS system. So in summary, we are supporting House Bill 278 because we think well used, and it's important that it be constructed carefully, this can be a very useful tool to municipalities that are staring in the face of very significant cost increases in order to pay off a liability. With that, I would be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Senator Wagner.
Yeah, this to me, this is part of the solution. What was the other part of the solution in Oregon? I understand selling the bonds and reducing the debt that a municipality might have, but after that debt's reduced, what's going to keep them from coming right back in the same situation again unless they take some preventative measures to keep out of that same rut?
Representative, through the chair, Oregon, very much like Alaska, went through some major difficulties with their pension system, and in 2003, a very significant piece of legislation was approved by the Oregon legislature to entirely rewrite the system. I think because of that, originally our liability was projected to hit as high as $17 billion. It is now projected to be somewhere between $5 and $6 billion. We haven't seen the latest evaluation, and the strong returns that the system has experienced over the past couple of years have definitely helped. But the bulk of the reduction came in the form of reforms, much of which moved the system from what is a more defined benefit system to one that is a combination defined benefit, defined contribution system.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
yeah, go ahead.
We have taken the same steps here to some extent, but I guess I don't feel that those steps are going to cure our problem. Our problem is one of excessive growth in the charges that we receive under people currently retired in medical treatment. And when you have people here in Alaska and their procedures cost sometimes three and four times what the same procedure would cost at Virginia Mason or other institutions outside the state of Alaska, and then the state of Alaska hasn't taken any steps to reduce that. So as all I'm saying is it looks like we're getting ready to jump right back in the cycle again. And I know that's not your problem, but I keep harping on this every once in a while so I can get somebody's attention so we address the real problem. Ours is not a problem of lack of money. Ours is a problem of ignoring a solution to the problem. So I'm kind of a cold shoulder on this, and I understand the process and everything. I don't think we had to go there, Mr. Chairman. I think we had to go someplace else and start addressing our major problems we have.
Thank you. Let's
if I might, sir.
Sure, go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, I could not agree more with Senator Wagner on his discussion that the greatest challenge we face, not only in our pension plan in the state of Alaska, but in our Medicaid system and in our workers' comp challenges, is this explosive, unsustainable medical cost growth. And that's also, we must make efforts to deal with that as another of the tools in our toolbox. And in this case, with the bonding business, again, I'd only ask that it be viewed on its own merits as just one of those many tools we need to approach, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah. Yeah, thanks, Rep. Hawker, for your testimony and your work. Maybe we'll go to Larry Simmons from Kenai. He's online. He was online. Maybe he got tired of us talking.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Larry Simmons. I am the finance director of the city of Kenai. And I just want to say that I appreciate the legislature's work so far in dealing with pension issues. I know this is hard work, and there are not easy answers. So I just want to say thank you very much for working on these issues. I want to be on the record personally that I'm in favor of House Bill 278 because it gives municipalities a tool to use in dealing with their unfunded liability. As Mr. Hawker said, all these pension obligation bonds do carry risk, just like other financial transactions, and that there are examples when they haven't worked very well, and there are examples when they have worked real well. Government Finance Officers Association for the last 2 years has seen presentations by Seattle Northwest Securities and others that about the Oregon experience, and Many of the finance officers see this as an opportunity. However, we all recognize that every municipality will extensively analyze the risk and make their own decision at the time that they're going to enter into these transactions. If the borrowing market is 7.5%, I'm quite sure that there's not going to be any municipal issuance of pension obligation bonds, because it's clear that it's not going to work out at that level. But if the potential benefits justify the risk, then I would expect that municipalities would use this tool. I'd like to comment that there is a concern about the moral obligation of the state being affected by pension obligation bonds. You know, the credit worthiness of the municipal issuer will be evaluated by the bond buyer community when these transactions are taking place. So while it's possible that a municipality would default on the debt, it does seem unlikely to me. It seems more likely that a municipality that's not in a position to carry the water, so to speak, would not be, the terms of the issuance would be such that they just couldn't do it. So I'd also like to say that, you know, I wonder if there would be any impact on the state if municipalities begin to have serious financial problems due to the impact of their PERS rates increasing dramatically. And, you know, personally, I think that there would be. If a municipality suddenly defaulted on their PERS obligations, the rest of the system would have to pick those up. And the state is about two-thirds of that system on the PERS side. In conclusion, Mr. Chairman, I hope that you will support giving municipalities tools to deal with their unfunded pension obligations. And this is, as we've heard, just one of the tools. There's other things that I'm sure you have in mind, and I'll be most happy to see those when they're brought out. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Simmons. I know you wear at least two hats, I'm aware of. There's another one on the arms board, and I'm sure that you guys have had several discussions on this, and maybe you could speak as an arms board member.
I really cannot. I can report that the arm board has not made a recommendation regarding pension obligation bonds, except to the extent in our report to the legislature we said that we would continue, the arm board would continue to evaluate pension obligation bonds.
And then am I to assume that the arms board, Larry, last here a couple or less than a month ago, they presented a report, I think with some political pressure on them. Is it fair to assume that the arms board is going to come back next January and February with some form of a list of recommendations, or are you guys done with that and want us to play with it?
Well, the arm board did make its report on April 18th, I think was the date, and it did have recommendations identified by three different priorities, and one of those priorities is embodied in House Bill 375. To my knowledge, that is the only action that the legislature has taken thus far on the arm board recommendation. I think that the arm board will continue to be concerned about the unfunded liability, and to whatever extent that we can, we certainly, at least from this arm board member's perspective, we would certainly want to apply ourselves to solving that problem. Obviously, the legislature holds the keys to that to the whole process. But I think the Arm Board will continue to be certainly interested in getting this resolved. Our task, as indicated in Senate Bill 141, is to manage the assets such that they'll meet the liabilities. And to me, that means let's get enough assets in the system to meet the liabilities, and that's a $6 billion problem, $6.9 billion problem today.
Okay. Thanks, Mr. Simmons, for your time, and we look forward to seeing you sometime this summer or next winter. I'm sure you'll be back.
I hope to.
I don't think we'll have the subject matter solved by then. If we could go to, there's another call in, Greg Sundberg. He's online from Merrill Lynch.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can everybody hear me?
Yes.
Great. My name is Greg Sundberg. I'm a managing director with Merrill Lynch in Seattle, and we are one of the parties that Representative Hawker referenced that have been working on House Bill 278, and I'm here today to also speak in support of House Bill 278. I think there's been a very good discussion of this topic up to this point, so I'm going to keep my remarks very brief. First of all, I want to reinforce one of the statements that Representative Hawker made, and that is that this is an important tool in the toolbox. We by no means view this as a fix for the systemic problem that caused this unfunded liability to begin with. We do think that as you move forward and you fix the systemic problems, that it's a tool that can be used very beneficially, depending on market conditions, to help reduce your cost of the unfunded liability that remains after the systemic problem is fixed. It's also not a tool that can necessarily be used by all entities or should be used by all entities. Bonds or the use of bonds exchanges a soft liability for a hard liability. There are clearly entities that are in a better position to manage an exposure to a hard liability better than others. And that's not our position to determine which should use it and which shouldn't, but there clearly are entities within the state of Alaska that will benefit from this more than others and probably represent some of the more sizable municipalities within the state. A couple of other things to note real quickly are, one, there were questions asked about prior use of this technique in addition to the excellent description that Representative Hawker and Ms. Samuels had of the Oregon experience. There are about 160 of these taxable pension financings that have been done in the past 3 years. Virtually every single one of those instances could be viewed as success in a retrospective fashion. I think one measure of success is that's less objective than others is to look at what the rating agencies who rate municipal obligations view the risk exposure of these type of transactions. And in general, existing ratings are maintained, and in some cases, the rating agency comment is actually positive related to the use of this tool. As long as the pension bonds are structured conservatively so that you have roughly equal employer savings over time, as long as you're using conservative actuarial assumptions in your savings calculation, as long as it is but one tool of a larger comprehensive pension plan, you have every reason to believe that the use of this tool would have no negative impact on ratings. And in fact, identifying the problem, fixing it systemically, and then implementing a pension bond program to lower the cost of the remaining liability is oftentimes viewed as a credit positive. With that, I'd like to either turn it over to questions or to the next party, Mr. Chairman.
Any questions? Senator Wagner.
No, I just got a statement I'm going to make at this time, and I think more of us need to make these type of statements to, and this is no disrespect to Representative Hawker. I think Mr. Mulder knows what's coming, and no disrespect to Mr. Wanamaker or Ms. Samuels, who I met earlier, I believe, or the gentleman from Merrill Lynch. But as long as ANWR maintains the current status, and as long as people in Washington and Oregon continue to be against the opening up of ANWR, I'm going to do everything in my power, legislatively and personally, to dissuade anybody in Alaska from doing any business at all with people from Washington, Oregon, and California. And that's all I wanted to say. And it's not that you don't have a good idea, Mike. I'm not here to say your idea is any better or any worse than any others, but that's just, I think, the attitude that a lot of us need to adopt when we're doing business and look elsewhere in the United States to some of our friends to do business with them and invite them to Alaska to do business with our municipalities.
Sorry about that, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Wagner. Well, Senator Wagner doesn't, you know, isn't alone in sharing his frustrations with some of the stateside policy influences over our little state.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, I would offer to you that I hear the same comments quite frequently from my colleagues in the House of Representatives. I believe I've made those same comments myself, but I think it was a U.S. senator that counseled me that maybe we ought to be a little careful taking that approach. But
well, that may be true, Mr. Hawker, but that senator hasn't gotten any further along than any of the rest of us with opening Anwar. He'd only be a nice guy so long. I've got a meeting.
Yeah, go ahead. I'll finish this up.
Mr. Chairman, we aren't going to move this anyway. We got no quorum.
Yeah, we don't have a quorum, but and I want to have Alaska Municipal League come forward and Rep. Hawker, don't run off now. Come on up, sit down. I think I've seen you once or twice. If you could identify yourself for the record and in your presentation, tell me what level of sophistication the communities have in the state of Alaska dealing with asset management, from Anchorage to the bush.
Okay. Kevin Ritchie with the Alaska Municipal League. Good afternoon. Thanks for hearing us. On behalf of the organization, I'd like to speak in favor of the pension obligation bond bill. We have a fairly extensive process. Finance officers from around the state are involved, elected officials, city managers, and so on. And at our meeting in November, there was a resolution passed supporting the ability to use pension obligation bonds. It was added to our policy statement and also on our platform. So it is a tool, as everybody has discussed. As Representative Hawker made very clear, it's not for everybody, and it may not be for anybody under many circumstances. In terms of the level of sophistication, I'm not the financial expert and certainly not an expert in the bond bank, but I tend to agree with the folks from the investment markets who've said that probably your larger municipalities, Anchorage, for example, would be far more likely to use this to understand the tool and understand the risks and the upsides and downsides and make a really good decision. Also, though, as I understand it, and I would defer to the bond bank, is one of the advantages, I guess the reason for the bond bank is because smaller municipalities on their own aren't as sophisticated, and that the bond bank kind of puts together packages to go to the bond market, and that's one of the advantages of the bond bank. In terms of understanding this, the way I've heard it explained to me, it in my mind, it's sort of like paying off, like refinancing your house in essence, where you pay off the debt and then you have a new debt instrument, you make your payments to that new debt instrument. So essentially in this case, I think you'd pay off the state, your PERS rate would go down because your liability's gone down, but then you'd have this other obligation, and the balance is this other obligation hopefully is going to be smaller than your state obligation for a long period of time, or permanently. The questions that need to be resolved prior to this, prior to probably anybody using this tool, is having an entire plan from the state as to how it can address the issue. And you know, the real bottom line, of course, is that on the local level, all of our citizens are double constituents. They're constituents of the city, they in the boroughs, they pay taxes, constituents of the state. And so this truly is an issue where we're together, you know, we're joined, and the real goal is for the state and the municipalities to work together for the best possible deal for our constituents. So this could be part of the solution for some communities. Some communities, even the very large ones, might say this is not something which we feel is appropriate. The smaller ones, I can't answer the question of how sophisticated they are. But I believe they would probably have to join together with other organizations to, you know, kind of evaluate this for their municipality, depending on the size of the municipality and sophistication.
Is it gonna,
that, thank you.
Other organizations as far as, or did you mean other municipalities across the state? It seems like they're looking at the list, a lot of the real small ones, a few of them are actually in surplus. And then we have a community like City of Fairbanks that's got a 30% funding ratio. And you would think, without looking at that, that the Anchorage and Fairbanks, being the largest, and you would assume the most sophisticated, would be better off than the average-sized community, or in particular the small ones. And the Alaska Municipal League then supports this bill.
Yes, sir.
And the Arms Board, I take it, is less comfortable, or has the Municipal League had any interaction with the Arms Board, or are you guys running just on two separate courses on this problem, or
no,
the problem being the whole unfunded liability issue?
Mr. Chairman, we've been working arm in arm with the Arm Board, we hope, and Larry Simmons is an excellent representative. He's, as you know, the finance director of the city of Kenai, a member of the Arm Board. The Arm Board as a whole, I've been to most of their meetings, hasn't taken a stand on whether the bonds, whether the pension obligation bonds are a good idea or not. And so that's just something that they're working through. But we're working closely with them in all other respects, and hopefully we'll be working with them as they continue to evolve their ideas and their recommendations.
Is there anybody else online? Is there anybody else here who would like to speak? If you could come forward, please, and identify yourself. Your face looks a little familiar.
Afternoon, Mr. Chairman.
For
the record, I'm Carl Rose, Executive Director of the Association of Alaska School Boards. We're on record as being in support of HB 278, pension obligation bonds. And I think I'd like to share with you that on behalf of school boards, this would be a decision we'd have to come to terms with our municipalities with over. And I think the issue is one of opportunity. If, in fact, the PERS incurs liability on behalf of a school district and that of our parent municipality was such that we could take advantage of this opportunity, I think that's a policy call that should be made locally. And that's what we're asking you for. We're asking you for the opportunity to make that policy call locally if it fits our needs at the local level. I would just share with you from my own personal investment. I think it was February of 2003 when the adjustable rate mortgages were down at 4.6. Never in my wildest dream would I have made the investment that I made at that time. But at 4.6% interest for 5 years, it opened up a whole new set of opportunities for me, and I took advantage of it. The same is true here. If, in fact, the numbers work out where it's an opportunity for local school districts and municipalities to use this opportunity, to take advantage of this opportunity, we're asking for the ability to make that policy call locally. So with that, I would share with you, this would be a partnership at the local level with our municipalities, and really, I think the previous speaker mentioned, it's a partnership with the state as well. If this serves us well at the local level, we'd like to be able to take advantage of it.
So is the, from the, I guess from the school board perspective, you're looking at this as a favorable mechanism then to deal with the TERS problem?
We think it could be in some of our school districts, and what we'd have to do is we'd have to match that up with our municipalities. I don't believe our municipalities would want us to go out and do something like this, nor should we be allowed to. We don't have the ability to tax ourselves. We don't have fiscal autonomy. But I think in conjunction with our municipalities, that's a discussion that could be had at the local level to determine if this was feasible or not. At the association, we passed a resolution. We're in support of this.
Okay, I guess that'll be a discussion for another day because of the state sharing and education cost and how that would work between the municipality and a state if we go down that route.
yeah, that would be another conversation. We've been very fortunate, and we appreciate the support that we've gotten from the state as school districts.
Okay. Thanks, Mr. Rose. Anybody else would like to say anything or forever hold their peace before Rep. Hocker comes up and finishes up? Yeah, come on up. I think maybe when we go forward into the next committee, the Finance Committee, it's more of a finance issue. But we should explore the whole issue of the rate of return on the portfolio, where this money is going to end up, and the debt service payment of the communities. And clearly there's an arbitrage play here, that if interest rates are low and their targeted rate is 8 or 8.25, there could be some savings and possibly some substantial savings. We just need to get everybody's comfortable with the risk inherent, so at some point in time we don't end up with, you know, a small number. Hopefully it's substantially larger than a 50-50 scenario, but, you know, in the likelihood that something turns upside down, that we are comfortable with an action plan to deal with it from the state level. There just seems to be and I appreciate your comment earlier, Rep. Hocker, of the ownership of the liability at the dealing with PERS in the municipality is the municipality liability. That's not universally accepted, not only in this building, but within the municipalities. Some of those folks feel it's 100% the state. But we'll deal with that another day.
Mr. Chairman, on that exact subject, should a municipality avail themselves of this opportunity, they'd be signing on the line and acknowledging that liability.
Yeah, I recognize that, and that's not all necessarily bad.
That is not a bad thing, sir.
Yeah, so, well, I would like to thank you for your time. Rep. Hocker and myself don't get together very often. That's kind of fun when we do. As pretty obvious, it's impossible to take action. I was three senators down when we started, and it was nice that Senator Wagner stayed here and listened. As you can see, this whole arena of the pension plan, we have 60 opinions in the building, plus. So, but we'll work forward together and try to come up with a resolution. I don't think dealing with the bill, we'll have another public hearing on it. When the committee deals with it, I think we'll just deal with it. That way, we don't have to muster guests from out of town or try to get everybody running around. I think there's enough conversation on this to have the finance table in the future sometime delve into those other risk associated issues and what they want to do with it. There is concern of the community and regional affairs deals with a lot of rural communities and smaller communities and organized areas, and their sophistication level is not as high as Anchorage and Fairbanks and Juneau. And with that, we need to recognize that there are different levels of sophistication all through this state, and we need to make sure that the people that participate in this understand the ramifications of what they're doing. And do you have any closing comments, or Rep. Hocker, before I adjourn the meeting?
No, Mr. Chairman, I particularly appreciate you indulging the hearing today and allowing us the time to have one of the best and clearest presentations we've had of this bill and the entire process. I'd also note, as you recognized yourself, that we have an obligation to the community in these jobs and the jobs that we have as elected officials. And where we may disagree on various issues, the most important thing is that we find where we can agree and take good policy forward. And in this case, I'd also note that my co-sponsor in this bill is Representative Kelly, who, and he and I also were on opposite sides of some pension-related issues. But again, I think it's a demonstration of our Representative Kelly's and my joint commitment, where we believe, despite other disagreements on tools, this is a tool we both concur is appropriate and would be a very good thing to take forward. And you're hearing this and be looking forward to putting the folks that have the technical information available on notice that is, if presuming they have an opportunity in the Finance Committee, they're going to have to be ready to provide some pretty solid evidence of the success of these transactions and the probability that we could execute successful transactions within the state of Alaska. I just thank you very much for your consideration.
Okay, thanks. Meeting adjourned.